You're listening to DTFHN for February 8th, 2026. I'm your Frequency Locked host, Jack Axman. We are your daily tech feed for Hacker News, a website where people who mass produce opinions also occasionally produce insight. Today's a day for tinkerers, archivists, and anyone who's ever fixed something out of sheer spite. Let's get into it. Story 7, the art of roads in games. Let me make the case against caring about this, roads in games. Pause, they're just infrastructure, right? The thing you lay down so buildings have something to connect to. Nobody boots up city skylines because they want to admire the curvature of an on-ramp. Players care about zoning, traffic flow, maybe the satisfaction of a well-placed bus route. The roads themselves are just pause plumbing, functional, invisible when done right. And honestly, that argument almost works until you watch someone spend 45 minutes perfecting a 5-lane turbo roundabout in a modded city builder and realize, pause, no, the roads are the game. They always were. This article by Sandbox Spirit digs into something that most players feel but can't articulate, pause, why roads in games have always looked slightly wrong and the mathematical reason underneath. And the answer is genuinely beautiful. Every game developer reaches for Bezier splines. It's the obvious choice. Pause, smooth curves, easy to implement, elegant interpolation between two points. Unity uses them, Unreal uses them, every vector graphics tool uses them, Bezier's are the hammer, and roads look like nails. But here's where it falls apart. Real roads aren't designed around mathematical elegance, they're designed around a physical constraint, pause the fixed distance between a vehicle's wheel axles. When you turn a car, those wheels trace parallel curves at a constant offset. That constraint produces something called a clothoid or Euler spiral, where curvature increases linearly with distance. Your steering wheel turns at a constant rate and the road follows. Bezier curves don't do this. Their curvature changes non-linearly, which means a car following a Bezier road would need to jerk the steering wheel at varying rates through the turn. Your brain registers this as pause wrong. Not dangerously wrong, just uncanny valley wrong. The road looks smooth but doesn't feel smooth. The fix is clothoid splines, and the author walks through how real highway engineers have used them for decades. The progression from SimCity 2000's gridlocked roads through city's skylines, freeform Beziers, to the modding community pushing past the engine's own limitations. Pause is a perfect case study in how communities iterate past what developers ship.
One commenter draws a parallel to Blob, or totaling Pause 256 possible neighbor combinations, collapsing to 47 valid patterns. Another links their MicroPython SimCity remake. This is the kind of deep craft knowledge that circulates in game dev communities, and the fact that it's all out in the open Pause blog posts, mod tools, GitHub repos Pause means every next city builder gets to stand on this work. The roads were never just plumbing. They were the hardest unsolved problem hiding in plain sight. From infrastructure nobody notices, to trust nobody can fake. Next up, pause, vouch. Story 8, vouch. There's a single line in the README that deserves more attention than anything else in this repository. Quote, the vouch list is maintained in a single flat file using a minimal format that can be trivially parsed using standard POSIX tools and any programming language without external libraries. That's the whole design philosophy in one sentence. Mitchell Hashimoto, the person behind HashiCorp, Vagrant Terraform, pause, built a trust management system for open source projects, and the core of it is a flat file, not a database, not a service, not an API you authenticate against, a file you can grep. The problem vouch addresses is real. AI tools have collapsed the cost of generating plausible-looking pull requests to nearly zero. The old filter pause, the sheer effort required to understand a code base, implement a change, submit it properly, pause, that filter is gone. Maintainers are drowning in contributions that look right but aren't. Ghosty, Hashimoto's terminal emulator, is already using this in production. The mechanism is straightforward. Trusted people vouch for other people. Vouched people can submit pull requests. Everyone else gets blocked or auto-closed at the gate. Projects can federate their trust lists into a web. So being vouched on one project carries weight on another. Denouncements travel too. Now, the comments raise legitimate concerns. Could high-reputation accounts become tradable commodities? Could denouncement be weaponized for political reasons rather than code quality? How does a genuine expert who happens to be new to a community pierce through? These are real failure modes, and they matter. But here's what the architecture tells you. The vouch file is plain text in your repository. You can read it. You can diff it. You can see exactly who vouched for whom and when, because it's tracked in your version control history. Every trust decision is auditable by anyone who clones the repo. Compare that to a proprietary platform making opaque decisions about who gets to participate. Pause rate limits you can't inspect, shadow bans you can't verify, algorithms you can't read. This is a trust system where the trust mechanism itself is transparent. The CLI is a Nuschel module with zero external dependencies. The GitHub integration is standard actions, fork it, modify the policy, run your own. The gatekeeping logic is yours to inspect and change. Whether Vouch scales to mass adoption is an open question, but the architectural choice pause flat file, POSIX passable, fully auditable, forkable, pause. That's the kind of foundation you can build real accountability on. Now for something completely different, from trust infrastructure to hardware hacking, pause. Someone's written custom firmware for a mini disc recorder. Story 9. Custom firmware for the MZ-H1. The Sony MZ-H1 is arguably the finest mini disc recorder ever made. It's the only one that can digitally rip mini discs back to a computer. Sony built this gorgeous piece of hardware with twin OLED displays, packed it with capability, and then pause in a move so perfectly. Sony, it hurts, pause, shipped it without the ability to show track titles on the unit itself during playback. You had to plug in the remote to see what you were listening to on your own device. Jim, who goes by Sir68K, decided to fix that. And the way he fixed it tells you everything about what happens when someone with real skill gets frustrated enough to crack open firmware that was never meant to be opened. The CXD2687 microcontroller inside this thing has no documented flash interface. Sony didn't include any firmware update mechanism, so Jim reverse-engineered the flash protocol from scratch. Pause figured out how to unlock it, erase sectors, rewrite them safely. Then he built a web USB installer so other people could apply the patch without bricking their units. The installer validates before and after flashing. He tested edge cases on his own hardware first, which, if you've ever done embedded development, you know is the purest form of faith. But the real breakthrough is the recovery mechanism. He found working JTAG access and discovered a boot ROM mode you can trigger by bridging two GPIO lines to ground. That means if something goes wrong during a flash, you can take control of the MCU over USB and reflash from scratch. He bricked one of his own RH1s during testing and brought it back. After that, he could push harder, test more aggressively, move faster. A safety net changes the entire pace of development. The firmware is open source, all of it, the flash tools, the custom code, the web USB installer. Jim explicitly says he released everything so he wouldn't be a bottleneck, pause, so others could contribute or fork and build their own firmware entirely. Run this forward 20 years. Every MZ-RH1 still working will be running community firmware, because Sony certainly isn't going to maintain it. The official software is frozen in 2006. The open source version is alive right now, getting track titles, scrolling across OLEDs the way they always should have been. This is a 20-year-old device getting its best software update ever from someone who just wanted to see what song was playing. We're on a real reverse engineering streak today. Next up, pause, someone cracked open an SGIO2, and what they found is fascinating. Story 10, reverse engineering the PROM for the SGIO2. The Hacker News comments on this one are split right down the middle, and it's the split that matters. Half the thread is people saying, just use Ghidra, and the other half is people who actually read what Matt Settle built and understand why that advice misses the point entirely. Here's a question nobody in the comments is asking directly. Pause. Why in 2026 is someone reverse engineering boot firmware for a workstation from 1996? And I don't mean that dismissively. I mean it as the most interesting question in this entire story. The SGIO2 shipped with MIPS processors topping out around 400 megahertz. In the early 2000s, the NecoChan community figured out you could desolder the CPU and drop in a 600 megahertz RM7000C. Worked great, no firmware changes needed, but there was a faster chip, pause the 900 megahertz RM7900 pause, and it needed PROM modifications that Silicon Graphics never provided. The community asked SGI for help. SGI said, maybe, then SGI ceased to exist. 20 years of dead end. What Matt built isn't a disassembler. Ghidra can disassemble MIPS. What he built is a decompiler that produces assembly source files you can actually modify and reassemble into a bit-identical PROM image. That's the key phrase, pause, bit-identical. It means the decompilation is verified, correct. Every instruction, every constant, every branch, target. He wrote external annotation files, pause, labels, comments, function boundaries, operand replacements, pause, that turn raw machine code into something a human can read, understand, and change. The difference between I can see what this firmware does and I can modify this firmware and prove my modifications are correct is the difference between archaeology and engineering. And this is where the open systems angle writes itself. Silicon Graphics is gone. The source code is gone. The engineers who wrote this prum are scattered across two decades of career changes. The only reason this machine can ever run a 900 megahertz processor is because one person spent the time to reverse engineer the firmware into something the community can modify. No company authorized this. No license was granted. The company that could have said no doesn't exist anymore. This is what happens when hardware outlives its manufacturer. The community becomes the maintenance team, whether anyone planned for it or not. The tools exist now. The problem is open. 20 years of watch this space might finally have an answer. From dead hardware finding new life to the most ancient timekeepers in computing. Pause, let's talk quartz crystals. Story 11, quartz crystals. What does it actually mean for something to vibrate, strip away the packaging, the metal cans, the circuit board traces, and you have a sliver of synthetic quartz with electrodes on both sides? That's it. 2 billion of these ship every year. Most of them spend their entire existence doing one thing, pause, ticking, keeping time for a microprocessor that has no concept of time without them. A clock that doesn't know it's a clock. The physics underneath this are worth sitting with. Quartz is piezoelectric, meaning mechanical deformation produces voltage and voltage produces mechanical deformation. It's a closed loop. Squeeze the crystal, it generates a charge. Apply a charge, it flexes. This is not metaphor. The crystal is literally moving. Pause, the two faces of the plate sliding against each other in what's called thickness shear vibration. At 10 megahertz, those faces are shifting back and forth 10 million times per second. The displacement is measured in nanometers. You will never see it, you will never feel it, but the electrical signature is so precise, so stable, that civilization runs on it. The equivalent circuit is elegant. Emotional inductance and emotional capacitance in series, pause these map directly to the physical vibration. A parallel capacitance from the electrodes themselves, and a small resistor representing friction losses. That's the entire model. At series resonance, the impedance drops to almost nothing at parallel resonance, just slightly higher in frequency. It spikes. The gap between those two frequencies is tiny, and that narrowness is the whole point. It's what makes a crystal filter sharp and an oscillator stable. PA3 FWM's article, originally written for a Dutch amateur radio magazine, walks through this with the kind of clarity that comes from actually understanding the material rather than summarizing a data sheet. The piece connects the equivalent circuit back to the underlying physics. Pause, showing how each electrical parameter maps onto a mechanical property of the vibrating quartz. That mapping is the real insight. The circuit isn't an abstraction layered over the physics. It is the physics expressed in a notation engineers can use. One detail from the article stays with you. In 1972, a train crashed because a crystal oscillator jumped to its third overtone. A badly designed circuit around a sliver of quartz vibrating at the wrong harmonic. The fundamental frequency was correct, the mounting was correct, the crystal was correct, but the circuit let the system find an unintended resonance, and the consequences were measured in steel and momentum. Precision matters even in the parts you never look at. From unintended resonances in quartz to intentional ones in silicon. Pause Apple's XNU kernel, just got a scheduler that knows when to push and when to coast. Let me read the existing episode, context to understand what's needed, and work with what's provided in the prompt. The task prompt already contains the article, title, URL, and HN comments, which gives me enough context to write the script. The clutch scheduler is Apple's XNU thread scheduling system. Pause. I have knowledge of this from my training data. Here's the script, story 12, Apple XNU clutch scheduler. In 1969, Dijkstra published a paper on the structure of the THE multiprogramming system. Its key insight was layered abstraction pause. Each level of the operating system only needed to understand the level directly beneath it. That idea echoed through every major scheduler designed for the next five decades. And it echoes here. Apple has published the documentation for their clutch scheduler inside the open source XNU kernel, and it reads like a masterclass in hierarchical resource allocation. Think of it the way a conductor thinks about an orchestra. You don't schedule individual notes. You schedule sections, pause, brass, strings, woodwinds, pause, and within each section, the players know their own priorities. The conductor's job is shaping the balance across the whole ensemble. That's essentially what Clutch does with thread groups. Instead of treating every thread as an isolated competitor for CPU time, the scheduler organizes threads into groups that share a common purpose. Pause your browsers rendering threads, your audio engine's real-time callbacks, your background indexing tasks. Each group gets a position in a hierarchy of scheduling buckets, and within each bucket, threads compete on their own merits. The hierarchy itself is where the interesting decisions happen.
The bucket structure maps directly onto Apple's quality of service tiers, pause user interactive at the top, background at the bottom, pause, but the edge-based design adds something genuinely clever. Edges encode the relationships between buckets carrying decay and priority information that lets the scheduler make fast decisions without walking the entire tree on every context switch. It's a graph traversal problem disguised as a scheduling problem solved with the kind of data structure elegance that makes you want to read the implementation twice. Now, this is Apple's kernel, so let's name the obvious. XNU is open source under the APSL. You can read every line of this scheduler. You can study how the thread group hierarchy interacts with the cluster topology on Apple Silicon, where performance and efficiency cores add another dimension to the placement problem. That openness matters. The comments on Hacker News are already asking the right questions. Pause. Does this explain why macOS handles real-time audio so well? The answer is partially yes. The QoS-aware bucket system means a deord audio callback thread gets structural priority, not just a nice value someone tuned by hand.
The documentation itself is worth your time. It's one of those rare cases where a company's internal engineering docs are clear enough to teach from. Pull this thread. We celebrated Apple's engineering, transparency, pause. Now let's talk about where that ecosystem's defenses are getting tested. Story 7. Story 12, more Mac malware from Google search. In 1988, the Morris worm spread across the early internet by exploiting Unix's send mail debug mode. Pause, a feature designed for administrators that became a vector for the first major internet worm. The parallel to what's happening right now with Mac malware is almost exact. Just 38 years later and with better production values.
Here's the setup. Attackers are buying Google-sponsored results. Pause the links that appear at the very top of your search. You search for something mundane like how to clear cache on macOS Tahoe, and the first result takes you to a Medium article or a page styled to look like Apple support. The page tells you to paste a command into Terminal. That command is base64 encoded to hide what it actually does, which is use curl to download and execute an AMOS stealer. Pause. A piece of malware that immediately starts copying your documents folder, your notes, and writes your password in plain text to a hidden file called .parse in your home directory. The engineering craft here, and I say this with genuine technical appreciation for the adversary, is elegant in a terrible way. Every step exploits a feature working exactly as designed. Terminal is designed to execute commands. Curl is designed to download files without quarantine flags. Ad hoc code signing is designed to let unsigned binaries run. The attacker doesn't break any of these systems. They convince you to break them yourself.
What caught my attention in the Hacker News comments is the connection to curl pipe bash installation patterns. Someone pointed out that even Claude Code's installer uses this pattern. When legitimate software normalizes pasting opaque commands into your terminal, you're training users to do exactly what this malware asks them to do. That's a cultural vulnerability, not a technical one. The defense here isn't a new security feature, it's literacy. Can you read a terminal command? Do you recognize curl when you see it? Do you know what base64 encoding looks like? These are the skills that matter now. Pause, not because macOS can't protect you, but because you're the one holding the door open. The tools to understand this exist. The knowledge is available. Use them. Next up, pause one of those projects that makes you love the internet. Someone built a font that renders Cistercian numerals using ligatures. Story 13. Cistercian numerals rendered through ligatures. I've spent enough time building text rendering systems to know that fonts are programs. They're not static lookup tables mapping characters to shapes. OpenType fonts contain substitution rules, conditional logic, contextual awareness. They are, in a very real sense, tiny virtual machines that execute inside your text renderer.
This project takes that idea and runs it somewhere, genuinely unexpected. A developer named Bobby Chen built a custom font that renders standard Arabic numerals as medieval Cistercian numerals entirely through OpenType ligature substitutions. No JavaScript, no canvas rendering, no server-side processing. You type the number 47 and the font's internal logic composes the correct Cistercian glyph from its component strokes. The computation happens inside the font file itself. Run this forward. Imagine if more domain-specific notations work this way. Musical notation rendered from plaintext input through font logic, circuit diagrams, chemical structures, the font becomes the interpreter, and the text remains searchable, copyable, accessible plaintext underneath. That's a genuinely powerful idea hiding inside what looks like a novelty project. The Cistercian system itself is worth a moment. 12th century monks developed a notation where a single compound glyph represents any number from 1 to 9999, four quadrants around a vertical stem, each encoding a digit through the orientation of lines and curves. It's a positional system like ours, but spatial rather than sequential, compact, elegant, and completely forgotten by history until typographers and font nerds started rediscovering it. What makes this project worth celebrating is the method. The font is on GitHub, the source is open, the ligature tables are there for anyone to study, fork or extend. If you've ever wanted to understand how OpenType substitution rules actually work, this is one of the clearest teaching examples I've seen. It takes a mechanism most people never think about and makes it visible. The tools are right there. Pull the repository, open the feature files, see how a font thinks. What happens when a community of finance nerds pulls every single book recommendation into one list? Next up, pulls the Oddlots Discord reading list.
Get set, story 14. Every book recommended on the Oddlots Discord. Let me make the case against this. 800 books on a list. That's not a recommendation pause. That's a library catalog without a librarian. No ranking, no waiting, no signal about which ones actually changed someone's thinking versus which ones got dropped in chat and forgotten. The comments nail it. Pause does recommended, just mentioned, because those are very different things. And yet,
run this forward. What actually happened here is someone scraped a Discord server, pause a private-ish community of people who genuinely care about understanding how economies work, pause and built a browsable, searchable interface for the collective reading list. The source material isn't an algorithm. It's not a bestseller list optimized for airport bookstores. It's the emergent bibliography of a community that argues about yield curves for fun. The unintended consequence is almost poetic. Bloomberg hosts the podcast, Bloomberg, the terminal company, the $12,000 a month information monopoly, and the most interesting knowledge artifact to come out of their ecosystem isn't behind the paywall. Pause is a free Netlify site pulling book covers and sorting by genre. The discourse that Bloomberg cultivated became a public resource that Bloomberg didn't build, doesn't control, and can't monetize. The community did what communities do when you give them a space and don't lock the doors. 800 books is too many to read. It's not too many to mine. The value isn't the list. Pause, it's the topology. What clusters together, which authors appear 3, 4, 5 times across different recommenders. That's a map of how a particular community thinks, and maps like that are genuinely hard to find. The site itself is simple, static, fast, open. No login, no tracking, no newsletter, sign up wall, just the books and the metadata. Someone thought this information should be accessible and made it so. That's the bootstrap at work, not the books themselves. Pause the act of making the list visible. From visible lists to visible work, pause. Let's check in with the builders themselves. What's the Hacker News community actually making right now? Get set, story 15. What are you working on every February? Hacker News asks the same question, and every February the answers function as a kind of census, pause, not of what's shipping, but of what people care about enough to build on their own time. Here's the detail worth pausing on: a veterinary practice ownership tracker. Someone noticed that private equity has been quietly rolling up animal hospitals the way it rolled up dental practices and dermatology clinics a decade ago, and decided the correct response wasn't an op-ed. Pause, it was a database, a lookup tool. You type in your vet's name, you find out who actually owns it. That's not a startup, that's a public utility built by one person who got annoyed. Now let me argue the other side for a moment. Does it matter who owns your vet? The dog still gets the same vaccine, the cat still gets the same blood panel. Private equity brings capital, standardization, buying power. Maybe the corporate vet is fine. Except it's not about the vaccine, it's about what happens when the objective function shifts from healthy animal to quarterly returns, upselling unnecessary procedures, cutting staff, raising prices because you've consolidated enough to eliminate competition. The ownership tracker doesn't tell you your vet is bad, it tells you who's making the decisions. Pause, and that's information you deserve to have before your dog is on the table. Scroll further and the pattern holds. A TUI sampler built by someone who wanted the specific intersection of vintage hardware and modern workflow that no commercial product offered. A Jellyfin Music client in Rust and GTK, pause, 6 months in, still adding features, because that's what happens when you build something you actually use a knowledge graph for learning that models what students know instead of treating AI as a black box that dispenses answers. None of these are going to IPO. Most won't make money. That's the point. The February thread is a snapshot of what gets built when the motivation is need, curiosity, or mild irritation, pause. Not a pitch deck. The tools exist. The knowledge is available. And once a year, 1,000 people show up to prove they're using both. This has been your daily tech feed for Hacker News for February 8th, 2026. This podcast is entirely AI-generated. Scripips by Claude Opus 4.6, voiced by Quen3TTS, not affiliated with Hacker News or Y Combinator. Now, go make something that surprises you. We'll see you back here tomorrow.